This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Mother-in-law.
She worries me so.
Mother-in-law,
mother-in-law,
if she leave us alone, oh, we would have a happy home. Sent from down below.
Mother-in-law,
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 mother-in-law.
Oh yeah,
Satan should
nothing like your mother-in-law, right? Just think of the pleasure of having your mother-in-law move in with you. What a wonderful thought that can be. Good morning, and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show, Tampa Bay's libertarian radio voice. I am Paul Molloy, and along with Big Ed Davis, we thank you for joining us on this Friday. Yeah, Friday already. Friday morning. By the way, we're here every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time. We've got a lot on the plate today, as you can imagine. We will be talking in a few minutes with Heather Kays. She is our education and policy expert. We talk about schools every Friday with Heather. And we're going to be talking this morning about universal school choice in Arizona. Universal. And the state of Oklahoma looking to Milwaukee regarding vouchers, among other topics. So, very interesting. And President Trump and his strike on a Syrian air base dominating the news, as you can imagine, this morning. We're going to discuss it all about it and get the barber pole take on it. So stay tuned for that. And our ultimate top 10 list, we have a good one, my friends. The top 10 greatest novels of all time, as decided by some of the great authors of today. So you'll want to stay tuned for that. Well, we also want to mention to you that we are sponsored in part by Andrew the Master Barber for the best haircut, the very best haircut in Tampa Bay. It's located in the Columbia Plaza in Clearwater on State Road 580, just west of the Countryside Mall. They're open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5:30, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Don't forget also, you can visit our website and hear our shows over and over and over again. What a thrill. Or if you've never heard them, you can go there, hit the podcast button, and listen at your leisure, thanks to Big Ed, ourfreedomworks.com, ourfreedomworks.com. Well, President Trump did perhaps had his most critical move yesterday, and that was a decision to launch an airstrike against a Syrian base. I say an airstrike, it was actually a strike from a battleship on a Syrian air base, a place where the suspected drop of chemical weapons had occurred from the planes there. And by and large, I think the world response has been positive from what I've seen. You know, Trump warned that he was going to do something like this the other day at that speech he held in front of the White House, outside the White House, when he said he was very, very upset about what he saw regarding that chemical attack and the innocents that were affected by it in Syria. He left no doubt that he thought Assad and his henchmen were responsible for it. So 59 Tomahawk missiles were launched from Navy warships in the Mediterranean just west of Syria. The airbase was in the western edge of Syria near a town called Homs, 3:45 a.m. in the morning. And it was one of these what they call pinpoint attacks. There are 7 air bases in Syria. This is just one of them. Certainly wouldn't cripple Assad, but it sends a message. I think it sends a message not just to Assad and Putin that Trump means business, I think it sends a message to China and North Korea that Donald Trump is willing to do things that maybe President Obama was not. You know, I think the world got into a bit of a, what do you want to call it, an insecure comfort zone with Barack Obama. Now you've got a president that is willing to respond to things that most of the world is upset about. So I think most for most of the world, it was a positive response. Israel Prime Minister Netanyahu said that, quote, in both word and action, Trump sent a strong and clear message that the use and spread of chemical weapons will not be tolerated. He said this was a calibrated, proportionate, and targeted response. I take that back. That last statement from the Prime Minister of Australia, Malcolm Turnbull. Japan supported the U.S. missile attack, saying the country understood and supported the strategy. Their prime minister said that the strikes were a means to prevent further deterioration of the situation. So, here's Turkey. Turkey welcomed the airstrike, calling it an important and meaningful development. So there you go. I guess there's always going to be people that are going to say we shouldn't be there. And one of them, by the way, was Rand Paul. And I will give Rand Paul credit. He is totally principled when it comes to his position, which is if we're not attacked, we don't attack. And in this case, we were not attacked. But the difference is that when you see innocent children and women suffering like they did, and, you know, the photographs of it, it becomes almost an emotional response too. You know, maybe in some, in the eyes of many, a justified emotional response. You know, one of the things I was wondering about, and I haven't really seen it, is whether or not Trump sat down with some, or not sat down, but phoned some of these countries and said, look, this is what we're going to do, and got their blessing. As an example, did he call Britain? Did he call Germany? Possibly France? Did he call, you know, some of the countries maybe closer to Syria before he did it? We don't know. And the other thing that you think about is whether or not the Senate, or I should say the Congress, should have something to say about this. Now, he did certainly speak with different people, his advisors and possibly some of the important leaders in the Congress. But it begs the question whether or not any attack by the United States on any country, and let's just say it was an attack on another country, should it be done without the vote of the Congress, right? That's always an ongoing issue. We've kind of let that go, right? Well, if you do a little pinprick attack, we're going to say it's okay. A good argument can be made to say, no, all of this is in the purview of the Congress. Anyway, we are going to take our break. And when we come back, Heather Kays and school education.
Well, I wanna, hug it. So baby, can't you see that you were meant for me? I want your lovin', yes sirree.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Gentlemen, if you're looking for the best haircut at the best price in Tampa Bay, look no further than Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Columbia Plaza on State Road 580. That's just west of US 19 in Clearwater. Andrew and Candy will see to it that you get exactly the cut you want. And if you remember how the barbershop used to be, where you were as much a friend as a customer, then this is the place for you. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Columbia Plaza on State Road 580, just west of US 19. Open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5:30, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2.
Toastmasters International from District 48 presents Toastmaster Talk on the Tan Talk Radio Network, helping the world become better leaders and speakers with your hosts, Brenda Alaco, Kathy Nabe, Lynn Perry, and Joseph Camerari.
Join Toastmaster Talk every Thursday afternoon at 5 o'clock right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Tom O'Brien is on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Every Monday through Friday from 4 till 5 p.m., Tom takes to the airwaves as he breaks down the day's market action. Tom combines his technical knowledge of the markets with his years of trading experience to take your calls and questions every market day from 4 to 5 p.m. Whether you're new to trading or an active day trader, don't miss out on the Tom O'Brien Show live on the Tan Talk Radio Network from 4 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday.
Hi, this is Tim Del Toro.
And I'm Lou Angelwolf, and we are the Grease Gurus.
Our show is broadcast every Saturday morning live at WTAN, Tan Talk Radio, 1340.
That's 10 o'clock every Saturday morning for an automotive forum that is flavored with humor and insight.
We encourage you to call in and be part of the Grease Gurus show.
We'd love to have you, and we will certainly help you find your inner grease.
This show is sponsored by Tim's Performance Service Center in beautiful Tarpon Springs at 906 Verona Place, and you can reach us personally at 727-543-1601.
Aha.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back on a Friday morning, and as per usual, every Friday morning, we talk with the delightful Heather Case, education reporter, policy expert, very much involved in schools and education in America. She's been published all over the place, USA Today, the Associated Press, Watchdog.org, The Hill, and many, many others. And Heather, I know we got, I think, about four or five stories here. Let's get at them. The first one is rather interesting. We go to Arizona. And apparently, National Review's done a story about this. It's called the Arizona Universal School Choice Program. Tell us about that.
So basically, what they're considering doing in Arizona is expanding their education savings account program, which already exists. But what they want to do is they want to eventually open it up to all school-age children. So this is somewhat similar to what they've been trying to do in Nevada, but they had all these legal challenges. And while it was found that the program was constitutional, the funding mechanism that they were using was found unconstitutional. So they need to find a new way to fund it. Mm-hmm. The difference here being in Arizona, the program already exists, and it's been expanding a little bit every year ever since the program came about. So what they're looking to do is over the next several years, expanding it every year to a few different grade levels at a time. So I do think that there actually is a good chance of this passing. There's been a lot of support of this program in Arizona, and it's helped a lot of families already. Somewhere around 3,300 families are already benefiting from the program. So it'll be interesting to see. There's no universal school choice program. The one in Nevada is considered nearly universal, but this would by far be the biggest education savings account program that would exist, which is very exciting.
Yeah, it would be. It would be exciting, and it's good to hear. Arizona is usually Republican, you know, but in many cases now with a lot of the immigration there, it's changing a little bit. But you could understand why they desperately or definitely need school choice availability, and this seems like a good step towards making that happen. Now, on to Oklahoma, and this is from their Oklahoma State University radio website, I guess. How could vouchers affect Oklahoma schools, they ask. And then they say, let's take a look at what is going on with vouchers in Milwaukee. So what's that all about?
So they're also considering an education savings account program or voucher type program in Oklahoma. And this is actually much more contentious. They have a small voucher program that exists already for students with disabilities called the Lindsay Nicole Henry Scholarship, but they're looking to expand that. There is a legislator there, Senator Rob Stanbridge of Norman, who is trying to make a voucher program or a school choice program larger and available to more families. But the same arguments that are always heard are coming up. Basically, that the already cash-strapped traditional public schools would end up losing money. But you know how I feel about that.
Oh, I know how you do.
If the students are being educated, then the money isn't being stolen or diverted from where it's supposed to go.
No.
It's just being utilized in a different way.
Yeah, and we want the money
and
to follow.
If it's more effective, then that's good.
Of course. Then we want the money to follow the student. It's this smoke screen that the unions bring up, you know. Oh, we're not funding our public schools the way they need to be funded so our children will be better educated. Yeah, but if we let the money follow the child and the choice as to what school they go to, that's really the answer. Now, you know, in Oklahoma, to me this is interesting. Oklahoma is very conservative. I mean, it is considered perhaps the most conservative state in the country. And I would have thought that vouchers would have been a huge thing. But from what I'm hearing you say, the only vouchers right now are involving children with disabilities. Is that true?
That's true. There was a pilot program for vouchers that took place, and I think that the perception is that it wasn't as successful as people would have liked to have seen. But the truth of the matter is, even with the pilot program, graduation rates improved for students who were using the vouchers. And even though the test scores might not have been as stellar as people may have hoped, I don't think that that is an indication that parents don't deserve options.
Of course.
I think that empowering parents to decide where to send their children to school is always a positive thing. So they should expand the program and give more families that option.
Now, they look to Milwaukee. We've talked about Milwaukee and voucher programs there, but they're thinking they want to base this idea on what's going on in Milwaukee?
They do, but that's the pilot program that they're looking at and saying, the results are not as wonderful as we would have hoped going to support this. But I think that that's flawed logic. I think that if the graduation rates are improved and if the parents and students are expressing satisfaction, then that should count for something.
I would think so. In other words, this article is against vouchers. It's Oklahoma University, possibly a liberal perspective on it, right? Is that why?
Absolutely. It's very jaded in the way that it's presented, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right. We are talking with Heather Kayes, we like to say she's ours, education reporter and policy expert nationwide. And we talk every Friday with Heather. We're big proponents of increasing vouchers and charter schools. And we like people that are involved with homeschooling to a large extent. So we kind of like to track what's going on in the world of schooling. On to Kansas. Hey, we're doing lots of things out there in the Southwest. But Kansas, there was a, I think I read about this person. A principal and was forced to resign at a Kansas school after the students started checking into her background. Tell us about this.
Oh, my goodness. I love this story so much.
Yeah, kind of. Me too. Go ahead.
So these student journalists started researching the new principal that was hired that was going to come in to be in charge of their school. She was going to be making $93,000 a year at this job.
Mm-hmm.
So they started researching her credentials, and they found a bunch of holes in her resume, things that didn't quite add up. The school that she got two of her degrees from wasn't accredited as a university any longer. They worked for weeks and weeks trying to get information to prove that this woman was qualified to hold the position that she was given. And what ended up happening is she resigned under the questions that were being asked because of what the student journalist had uncovered.
Wow.
And I commend the superintendent and the advisors and all of the adults who, instead of telling these students, stop sticking your nose where it doesn't belong, or telling them to mind their own business, instead they encourage them to keep trying to track down the truth, to the extent that this woman ended up resigning and leaving. Which she has made it seem as though the students are wrong and she's not admitting that they're right, but she did resign the post.
Yeah.
If she was able to prove her credentials, then I don't know that she would have stepped down.
No. Now,
it seems like the students were really on to something.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to ask you, they must have smelled a rat to begin with, because why would they start an investigation? That doesn't normally, you know, something had to trigger it, right? Somebody somewhere along the way must have gave them a tip. You know what I mean? I wonder how that started. Do you know?
Well, they wanted to look into her credentials, and the one university that she had attended had a lot of negative things written about it on the internet, basically that it was a diploma mill, and that, you know, the Better Business Bureau wouldn't endorse it. It wasn't accredited. And then once they started looking into that, then they found out that she couldn't produce documentation of her undergraduate degree either. She had been living abroad for years, so whether or not her consulting experience is actually credible was also not able to be proven. So basically everything they looked into, it just got fishier and fishier, and eventually the woman just ended up resigning.
Yeah, and I
this is some
go ahead.
All the adults in the room had already agreed that her resume was solid and this woman was fine. And these students are the only ones who really questioned it thoroughly enough that they actually brought to light that maybe this resume is a bunch of baloney.
Yeah, right. But it also kind of makes the superintendent look bad, right? I mean, I can see why the superintendent is patting the kids on the head now. Oh, good kids. Yeah. But why didn't these adults in the room, as you put it, have checked into this woman even more before they hired her? It sounds like, you know, they liked the way she came across in the interview, and they didn't really bother to. I mean, that's what it sounds like.
That is what it sounds like, and it never should be the case with something as important as educating students. But I commend the student journalists for taking this as far as they did.
Yes, indeed. So let's go on to Hartford, Connecticut, where the state of Connecticut apparently eliminating test scores from teacher evaluations. My goodness. This is kind of, that sounds strange to me, but let me hear you. What's your take?
I'm not happy about this. I think this is nonsense. So there's been a lot of arguing in recent years about whether or not test scores should be part of the calculation when it comes to teacher evaluations. In my personal opinion, they should be. And also, the governor agreed up until 5 seconds ago, and now this is a complete reversal on that. Some of the board members, the education board members, are asking questions like, why do we have to not count it at all? Why can't it just count for less? That's a very reasonable question.
I would think so.
I truly don't understand. And I would have to guess and assume that it's union pressure.
I think
so. And just people not wanting to argue over this point anymore, so that they sort of just gave up on it.
If
the test scores are going to be used against students, then they should be factored into teachers' evaluations at the same time. If not, then let's just get rid of the tests and call it a day.
I can't believe that it wouldn't be a factor. I can't believe it. I mean, what are you going to take for how effective the teacher is if you don't at least consider the quality of the students and their knowledge at the end of the year in the final exams that they take? What basis do you have for evaluating a teacher if you do not include performance of the kids? I mean, this boggles my mind. This is, again, the kind of nonsense that we seem to get when we have in schools these union demands. It's always to cover. I mean, it isn't to educate kids. Unions are not there to educate kids. They're there to protect teachers. And anybody, I've never seen a major city where the unions were there to really care for the kids. They were there to protect the teachers. Your thought on that?
You're exactly right. And I don't even think that the unions are shy about pretending that they're there to protect the kids anymore. Yeah. I think that they'll flat out say that they're there to protect the teachers, and that's the only thing that matters.
Yeah.
But things like this are extremely frustrating to me to see. This is a complete reversal by the governor, who made a big deal about connecting test scores to teacher evaluations. It was basically the centerpiece of his plan for education reform in the state. And now here we are just completely reversing the position with no real explanation as to why or how that is justified.
Yes, indeed. And if I were the parents in Connecticut, which is considered to be a very good, you know, state for education, I would be outraged. I would be outraged. And finally, we've got our good friend Betsy DeVos, who was down here in South Florida visiting some of the schools. And, of course, the last time she was here, Heather, I think she was with President Trump, who has a home down in South Florida. Tell us about this story.
Right. So she has been visiting a bunch of different charter schools in Florida. And the reason I really wanted to bring this up is because Betsy DeVos has repeatedly said that Florida, which is a very school choice friendly state, is the model for what the country's K through 12 schools should look like. And I thought that that was a point worth noting because I think that it's going to say a lot about what it is that she attempts to do in her capacity as education secretary now. I think that I know she has a lot of people working within her department now who are from Jeb Bush's Education Foundation, and they are very much enamored with the idea of creating a national school choice program that is similar to the tax credit scholarship program that exists in Florida currently, which I think would be a fantastic thing to see.
I agree with you. God bless Jeb Bush. I mean, I know people have different thoughts about Jeb Bush. If it wasn't for Jeb Bush, this whole concept, of running the money for these kids through the businesses to get around these stupid laws, you know, and so they can use this as a model. And I know they're already doing that, but, you know, that's good news. And Betsy DeVos, I think she's the right person in the right place at the right time, right?
Definitely. And she's dealing with a lot of pressure from all different directions, but she's been doing a good job of, you know, remaining composed and doing what she needs to do. So it's always nice to see that.
It really is. And it's a good way to end the interview, you know, about Betsy DeVos, Heather. And as always, we appreciate your weekly input with us. So we'll look forward to talking with you again next week. So safe travels in the meantime.
Thank you.
Okay, there she goes. The traveling girl, Heather Case. All right, we're going to take our break. And when we come back, the barber pole is going to react to the attack on the airbase in Syria.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Gentlemen, if you're looking for the best haircut at the best price in Tampa Bay, look no further than Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Columbia Plaza on State Road 580. That's just west of US 19 in Clearwater. Andrew and Candy will see to it that you get exactly the cut you want. And if you remember how the barbershop used to be, where you were as much a friend as a customer, then this is the place for you. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Columbia Plaza on State Road 580, just west of US 19. Open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5:30, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2.
If you are in or near retirement, this message is for you. We've designed a brand new show with you in mind, Retire Sharp Radio. Each week, host Derek Afazi will teach you the Retire Sharp planning system. You only get one shot to make your retirement everything you want it to be. And that's what the Retire Sharp planning system is all about. So check out Retire Sharp Radio, Wednesday afternoons at 3.
Each week, the Talk of the Town show will be highlighting local news and events that are happening right here in Tampa Bay. How many times have you missed an event and wished that someone had reminded you about it? Well, now you can always be in the know. Stay tuned each Saturday at 9 a.m. and be informed about the interesting things that your neighbors are doing and hear interesting stories from people right here in your community. Tune in every Saturday at 9 a.m. at Tan Talk WTAN.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
They are back on a Friday morning. I want to remind you, we're sponsored in part by the best place for a haircut in Tampa Bay, my friends. I know. Been around here a long time. Andrew the Master Barber and his barbershop in the Columbia Plaza in Clearwater. It's right near the Dunedin border. Very close. Closer than you think. And they're located in the Columbia Plaza on State Road 580, just west of the Countryside Mall. And they are open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5:30, and Saturday, tomorrow, 8:30 to 2 p.m. And we have the Master Barber, and he's put down his shears for a moment. He's going to give us his thoughts on this strike on the airbase in Syria by President Trump. Andrew, your thoughts on it.
Well, you know, I was shocked last night when I was watching the TV and that came on. But, you know, I believe he did the
right... What was your gut reaction right away? What was your first thought, really, if you can remember?
I said, wow. My first gut reaction was, wow.
Yeah.
Okay?
All right.
Now, I believe he did the right thing. As long as he knew and had the intelligence that it was Assad that let this go.
Mm-hmm.
And according to what I understand, they were able to trace the airplane that took off with the chemical weapons, watch where they dropped them with surveillance, and watch the plane fly back. And I believe Trump had the positive evidence to make the decision he made.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody would think it couldn't have been the rebels. They don't have any planes. It couldn't have been ISIS. They don't have any planes.
Yep, but you know, but the rebels did have some chemical weapons.
Yes, but these were dropped by
airplane. They were dropped by airplane.
Yeah.
That's right. Now,
yeah.
I'll tell you what Trump
and they
did.
Were dropped. And they were dropped on these citizens in those areas where the rebels were. So
yep. Now, what amazes me the most is how Trump handled this whole situation. Do you remember the movie The Godfather?
I'll make you an offer you can't refuse.
Now, there was one part where Michael Corleone, they were having wars with other mobs at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Corleone threw a dinner, and he had the bosses from these other people, these other families, at this dinner. Meanwhile, while he was sitting down eating dinner with them, his army was taking out all of their guys.
Yes.
And I sat there and I says, well, you look at what President Trump is doing here. He's got the president of China sitting on the side of him eating dinner, telling him, listen, you better do something about this, your buddy there in North Korea, because I've warned him. Meanwhile, this guy doesn't even know it, but Trump is bombing the crap out of Syria.
Yeah. I mean,
and, you know, Barack Obama drew his red line, if you remember, if he uses chemical weapons, and he used them, and what did Barack Obama do? He moved the line back 3 feet.
Right.
Okay? So, you know... The people around the world are giving Trump the applause.
Yeah, in fact, I think you make a good point about China. Because if Trump is reacting to something like this in Syria with Putin standing there watching.
That's right.
Why would he not possibly do something in North Korea with China?
That's right.
Standing there watching. So perhaps this is a way of goading China.
Well, you know, I hope that he had the president of China watching those battleships last night launch those rockets.
Yeah.
Okay,
exactly.
Because you know they don't have it.
That's right.
And he did it perfectly, man. Talk about doing it right. I mean, the guy is a genius. He had his world leaders right there watching.
Do you think he got the approval, or at least he informed countries like Britain and Germany and possibly France before?
Yeah, of course he did.
Okay.
Of course, this guy is not stupid.
Mm-hmm.
He covered all his bases. He even seated some of the Democrats sitting there saying, hey, he did the right thing.
Well, he got pretty much worldwide praise from Japan, from Australia, even from Turkey.
That's what I'm saying.
And Israel.
You know, as long as his intelligence were right, my only hope was it wasn't a false flag, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't believe it was because I got my faith that Trump knows what he's doing and he had the intelligence before he did it.
We're talking with Andrew the Master Barber and his barber pole. What about Putin now? I mean, do you think he might have done it with one thought, you know, if I do this, people are going to perhaps stop talking about the fact that they think I'm colluding with Putin?
You know, that just happened to fall in place with it, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, the chemical attack happened, period.
Yeah, right.
I mean, you saw the pictures of these innocent little kids, man.
Oh, it's terrible.
I mean, it breaks
very
your heart.
Very moving.
To see this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was even amazed to see NBC and CBS put these pictures of these kids on, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Because I thought they were going to hold it back. But they didn't.
No, they
didn't.
But
I can tell you one thing that Trump did do, okay, that was the Barack Obama administration we would always wonder what other countries are going to do to us, okay? What Trump did was throw everybody to ball and wonder what we're going to do to them now.
True.
Now, you know what I'm saying?
I do. Now,
we've been wondering, what are they going to do to us next? Guess what? They're going to be wondering now, what's this guy going to do? When they said he was unpredictable, it was a perfect thing.
Yeah.
And he did it properly. If he would have gone to the UN, oh, we got to sit and talk about it. We better let everybody know what's going to happen. You know?
Yes.
Forget about them. They don't even count.
No. Now, let's be honest. This is a 180 degree, though, by Donald Trump. You remember?
Well, I understand,
you remember a few years ago, he was big on saying, Syria is not our affair. We will be wasting men and money.
You know, Paul, let me tell you a story. At one time, I had a young friend of mine that had two children before I ever had any. And I was like 21 years old at the time. And my friend lost his two-year-old son to leukemia.
Oh, wow.
And I remember going to that funeral home. And it bothered me, okay, but it didn't wrench me. I didn't have a child. I didn't know what it was like to have one. But, you know, when my daughter was born, the first one I ever had, the first thing that went through my mind was, my God, now I know what my friend Sam felt when his child died.
Mm-hmm.
Until you have that experience, you don't know what it's like.
Right.
Okay, and Trump was saying, you know what, we don't have to worry about this right now and everything else. But you know, Trump's daughter just had a baby, didn't she?
Yes.
He had his grandchild. Now, what do you think went through this man's head when he saw these babies? Babies!
No, he had a very, and I think most everybody would agree with, you know, he had a human emotional response, and also I think there was a practical response as well. No,
I mean,
you know, no criticism there.
The man made the right decision, and you know what? He has every right in the world to change your mind about things. He might have been a little bit wrong of what he said before, but he knew what happened to be right at this time.
Yeah, very.
And he was guided, believe me.
Yeah. Now, I want to just quickly, before we let you go, talk about the Gorsuch for Supreme Court deal. They're going to be voting on it today. It looks like they've already gotten rid of the 60-vote threshold.
That's right.
That the Democrats, by the way, got rid of for the Republicans. The Republicans just took it up a notch to the Supreme Court because the Democrats had already got the simple majority for all of the other judgeships. So it's about to be a vote in favor of Gorsuch unless a big surprise occurs.
Nothing's going to happen. He's going to there today.
Would you say that Donald Trump's had a good week?
I thought Donald Trump is doing exactly what could be expected. He's batting 1,000 for the 75 days he's been in office, Paul.
Ah, not even 1,000. I mean,
this guy's batting 1,000, man. Okay,
mistakes.
The guy, let me tell you, it's like I told you. This man is playing chess in 3D, mm-hmm. when everybody's around him playing checkers on a barrel.
I
you
like
understand?
That. Yes, I do.
I mean, this guy has got it together. Now, people are starting to realize this.
Yeah.
Okay? And you watch and see after what he did today. Oh, you're going to have your protesters. Oh, how could he do this? He bombed an air base, and he showed them what it's about. He flexed a little bit of muscle, and from now on, people have a little more respect than they had for us with the Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton administrations.
Yeah. In fact, even the very liberal Tampa Bay Times is taking its foot off the accelerator pedal a little bit on him.
But
they realize that I think he's got the sympathy of the public, don't you?
That's right. Well, listen, the man is making every right move, man. It's all falling into place. You know, the protests are quieting down, and people after this, I can tell you who's happy about this is Susan Rice.
I just was going to tell. I just you and I are thinking alike. I was just going to say
Susan Rice. Right now, she's dancing in the street.
She's clapping her hands right now.
That's right, Miga. Thank God, Donald, you got the monkey off of my back.
Send another missile, Donald.
That's right.
Please.
You understand?
Yeah.
So everybody's happy right now. And you know what? Keep it that way.
You're right. Well, my friend, as always, you speak with a lot of sense. We're going to look forward to talking with Andrew the Master Barber again next week. Thanks, Andrew.
You got it, buddy. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. The Master Barber has spoken. My goodness me. All right. We're going to take our final break. And when we come back, we're going to do a couple of things. We're going to talk baseball with our sports guru, Big Ed. And then we're going to talk about the greatest novels of all time.
You know it's a lie, 'cause that'll be the day when I die. Well, you give me all your loving and your dirt of loving, all your hugs and kisses and your money too. Well, you know you love me, baby, still you tell me maybe that someday, well, I'll be through. Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Gentlemen, if you're looking for the best haircut at the best price in Tampa Bay, look no further than Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Columbia Plaza on State Road 580. That's just west of US 19 in Clearwater. Andrew and Candy will see to it that you get exactly the cut you want. And if you remember how the barbershop used to be, where you were as much a friend as a customer, then this is the place for you. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Columbia Plaza on State Road 580, just west of US 19. Open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5:30, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio Herd every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food and Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com.
My bridge is all.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave, you know it's
we're back. And before we get to talking a little baseball and talking a little top 10 greatest novels of all time, I wanted to talk a little bit about this story that the Associated Press put out regarding Fox News. Did you know that Fox News, now Fox News has come under some scrutiny, especially from the liberals. They hate it. You know, it's the only, frankly, it's the only major network that's conservative that I know of that is in the on the air. They're so good, though. They are now more watched than any other cable network, and I don't mean just news. Did you know that? Fox News is number one in everything. They beat out TNT, TBS, and USA Network, and all those other networks, HBO, whatever they are. Fox is number one. They just finished the first 3 months of 2017 with the biggest quarterly audience that a cable news network has ever had. And it's interesting because there has been a drumbeat of embarrassing stories, mainly put forth in the New York Times and the Washington Post and the like, about Bill O'Reilly and... And before him, Roger Ailes. Of course, Bill O'Reilly has the most watched show on Fox, The O'Reilly Factor. But apparently he's been paying off a bunch of women that have accused him of sexual harassment. So he's going down that road, as did Roger Ailes, who was fired as the head of Fox News about a year ago. So despite all of that, Fox News is rolling along. It's very interesting to see how well Fox News has done. And it's mainly because people were looking for an outlet other than what they were used to for all of those years, you know? They were looking for an outlet, and they couldn't find it. They had all those years, they had Rush Limbaugh. He was the only thing, you know? It was like David against Goliath. There was Rush Limbaugh against ABC and CBS and NBC and all of the newspapers that were liberal, the New York Times, the Washington Post, all of them across the country, USA Today. And then Fox News came along and grew and grew and grew, and it's now at this point. So very, 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 very interesting. Okay. Now that that is out of the way, baseball has begun. Believe it or not, we are ending the first week of baseball. And I wanted to talk with Big Ed, who was our sports expert, and likes baseball and football, although I think he likes football a little better. But those are his two sports. So, Ed, first of all, are we at any point able to discern what teams to watch? I'm sure the Cubs and Cleveland are teams to watch. Do you have any feeling on, are the Rays going to be a factor? Or are there any teams you think that are going to be a big factor?
This really, it's hard to say.
In other words, it's just too early.
Yeah, it's just such an open door. There's so many games and so many injuries.
Well, let's talk about the Rays.
Okay, we'll stay at home.
Do you like their manager?
No.
Kevin Cash.
I like him. No, wait. I like him as a person. Okay? Mm-hmm.
But that's not a good answer.
Okay, but he's not qualified. I'm sorry.
He's not?
No.
Now, why is he not qualified to be the manager of the Rays in your
Well, he is qualified in one sense because he's cheap. And he's inexperienced. And he follows orders from what upstairs says to do.
Okay.
So that's what...
But you don't think he's got baseball knowledge or what?
Not enough. Mm-hmm. Not enough.
Not enough experience.
If he didn't have a job here, he would not have a job anywhere.
What was he doing before he became the manager of the race?
I believe he's a...
Was he a bagger at Publix?
He's probably a bat coach somewhere. I can't remember.
Okay. So they got him on the cheap is what you're saying.
Yeah.
And it's funny, we had perhaps the best manager in baseball, and now you're thinking we had one of the worst.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to say the worst. I'm just saying the most inexperienced. Like, I can see a lot in his press conferences where he you can tell by his eyes he didn't know what he was going to say. Yeah. And he didn't want to say the wrong thing because there's a higher up that's running that place. And that's why we see the same things we used to yell the TV about Madden about when Madden was coaching. Why is he doing one? Why is he doing this? We see the same thing with Kevin Cash. It's because it's coming from upstairs, with taking them out of the game early, the pitch count, always having a pitch count, pulling him out early. Everybody's wondering why are you doing that.
You actually think that there is somebody upstairs
that is phoning down and saying
this is the time to pull.
No. I'm not saying he's Al Davis or he's. Or he's pacing the sidelines, or he's Jerry Jones.
But
I'm sure that when closed doors, there's a game plan. Okay.
Okay.
There's a game plan to do this, and then do that, and we're never going to. In my opinion, baseball is completely whacked out as far as salary goes, and I don't agree with having a $200 million payroll. But when you have a $50 million payroll and you try to compete with two clubs that have $200 million, come on. Your chances of finding the diamonds in the rough are so slim every year.
So if you were to push the coach aside for a second, what do you think of the quality of the team itself? Is what you're saying is we don't have the players in Tampa?
No, you don't have the horses at all.
So it's going to be a long year here.
I don't see it's going to be a long year. I mean, Evan Longoria's getting older, you know, and they're trying to switch the face of the franchise to
Have they sold off all their other good players except for Longoria?
Sure they have. Or they've let him go or whatever, but traded him away.
Who's their best pitcher?
Well, right now, I guess you have to say Archer, what he did the other day, in opening day.
Okay.
You know, he went 7 innings, which was nice to see him be able to do.
Yes.
But I definitely think he's their best pitcher. Last year, I was most disappointing pitcher. So.
Well, if we go to Tropicana Field... What is it? Is it Tropicana Field?
Yes.
Okay. If we go to, because they always change the name. If we go there.
I haven't changed it in 20 years.
I remember when it was the Thunderdome.
I do. I love that name.
I did too. I liked it more. Okay.
You remember when it was the Suncoast Dome?
Yeah, the Sun Dome. That was kind of too.
The Florida Suncoast Dome.
Yeah, yeah. But they fixed up the field a little bit. They've got new turf. So, I mean, but if we go as a fan to the games, are we just. Is all we have to look forward to looking at how nice the turf is here. We're losing 10-0, so let's look at the concession stand, and we'll look over there, and I'll look at the turf.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll look. Is that it?
Fresh coat of paint, everything like that. You know?
And that's all we can look forward to.
Kick the tires, make sure they're fine. Everything's good.
All right. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. It's on to our top 10. I think this is a very good one, and the reason is that the 125 top writers. Have come up with what they call the top 10 greatest novels of all time, all right? So we're going to go with what they think. And without further ado, here they are. Number 10, Hamlet. The only problem is Hamlet's a play. I don't know where the Dummkopf is that thought that this was a book. Although you can read it, and you should, it's not really a book, but they got it down here as the top 10 greatest. Now, a guy by the name of Bill Shakespeare, good personal friend of mine, wrote it. It was very, very well done. Mm-hmm. That's all I can say. Number 9. This is a book called In Search of Lost Time. You ever heard of that, Ed?
I'm going to save you some air right now. I have never read a book from cover to cover, period. Okay. So don't ask me.
All right. Well, In Search of Lost Time.
I always wait for the movie.
Very good. In Search of Lost Time by... Did you ever see the movie on Hamlet?
Nope.
It's a good one.
Too much singing.
There's no singing in Hamlet.
There's not?
Right. No!
I'll watch it.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, In Search of Lost Time, number 9 by Marcel Proust. The first part of his 7-part cycle, published in 1913, introduced the themes that run through the entire work of love. All right, number 8. The Stories of Anton Chekhov, by Anton Chekhov. Chekhov was a Russian short story writer, a playwright, and a doctor, and considered to be one of the greatest short story writers in the history of world literature. Number 7. Huckleberry Finn. That's on everybody's list.
Good movie.
Yeah. There's several versions of it, by the way, about 9 or 10. Mark Twain, it was a great book. You know all about it, about Huckleberry Finn and his trip down the Mississippi with the slave Jim. Number 6. Middlemarch. Middlemarch. It was by George Eliot. A study of provincial life. And you know George Eliot was a woman?
Mm-mm.
Mary Ann Evans was her real name. It was her 7th novel. Number 5. I bet you saw this movie, Lolita?
Nope.
By Vladimir Nabokov. Lolita, about this man and his infatuation with a young girl. Number 4. The Great Gatsby. Did you see that?
Nope.
F. Scott Fitzgerald's great book chronicles an era that Fitzgerald dubbed the Jazz Age, followed by the shock and chaos of World War I. Number 3, War and Peace. Have you ever heard of that one? It's Leo Tolstoy. Yeah, War and Peace. It was a huge novel. I mean, it can take a half a lifetime to read it. Graphic detail events leading up to Napoleon's invasion of Russia. Number 2, Madame Bovary by Gustave Flaubert. A daring and, at the time, ostentatious book that looked into the heart of an adulteress. And finally, the number 1 book of all time, novel.
Couldn't guess it if you had a gun to my head.
Anna Karenina by Leo Tolstoy. Now, that was made into a movie with Greta Garbo, among others. It tells of the story of the doomed love affair between the sensuous and rebellious Anna and a dashing officer by the name of Count Vronsky. So there you go, the top 10 novels, my friends. You have a wonderful weekend. Stay safe. And always remember, freedom works.